Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on wisdom when we come back. You know, Charles Lyell is one of the pillars of modern geology. He published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people who believe them don't even know who it was that originated these ideas, but it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins was devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes back through time indefinitely. And in that way, catastrophes like Noah's flood have been strictly ruled out, and this process is called science. Well, listen to this. Physicist Thomas Barnes points out that the Earth's magnetic field had been decaying regularly since it was first measured in 1835. Now, if the half-life of the magnetic field is truly what Dr. Barnes has shown from careful measurements, the conclusion is that the Earth's magnetic field would have been equal to that of a magnetic star as little as 10,000 years ago. Now, according to Dr. Barnes, to be consistent with the laws of physics, and assuming that the magnetic field has continually weakened, we can only conclude that life on planet Earth would not have been possible more than 10,000 years ago. Now, what did our teachers tell us about the extinction of the dinosaurs? Didn't they tell us that that was 65 million years ago? And yet life would not have been possible on this planet 10,000 years ago, just measuring the decay of the magnetic field. Now, you know, we don't have to be rocket scientists to do the math on these kinds of pseudo-scientific lies. And that's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the banner of science. And it's one more of the many lessons that we teach here in our Mosaic Law School, which we conduct twice a year here at the law school in Isabella, Missouri. Now, if you'd like to learn more, and if you'd like to find out more about the law school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. You don't have to come to law school. You can do it at home. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're talking about wisdom. And the last time when we looked at wisdom, we defined the term. Remember? Wisdom is associated with witty inventions and wise counsel, instruction, understanding, justice, judgment, equity, knowledge, truth, right, righteousness, discretion, prudence. These are the attributes of the wise, or of being wise, or having wisdom. Or as my old granddad used to say, common sense. Now, foolishness is associated with fools. And fools die for want of wisdom, and fools despise wisdom. Fools despise instruction. Fools hate knowledge. Shame shall be the promotion of fools. We're instructed to forsake the foolish. The fool shall be servant to the wise. A companion of fools shall be destroyed. Fools mock sin, and a fool despises instruction. These are the attributes of fools and foolishness. And we get this from the Creator Himself. God Almighty said, hey, let me tell you about fools and foolishness. And there's plenty of them out there. I looked at this, and I've done a lot of crazy, foolish things in my life. You know, I used to have eternal life when I was 19. So I used to fly airplanes under bridges and power lines. You know, when you're young and you got life in front of you, you know, you turn 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, you know, you think you got the world by the short hairs. And then as time progresses along, assuming your foolishness doesn't get you killed in the process, you know, you wise up. And as you wise up, as you observe, as you watch what's going on around you, you discover that there's a lot of people out there that are telling you things that aren't true. The other day we were talking about Christmas, and I said, hell, everybody knows that Jesus wasn't born on December the 25th. You could be an ardent Catholic, for crying out loud, and go to church three times a week, and you know that Jesus wasn't born on December 25th. Well, then why are you celebrating His birthday on December the 25th? I mean, if your birthday was on March 7th, why would we be celebrating your birthday on April 16th? That's kind of stupid, isn't it? I mean, if you're going to celebrate birthdays, we like to get the birthday on the right day. So somebody says, well, we don't know when his birthday was. Well, if you don't know when his birthday was, pretty hard to celebrate his birthday, isn't it? But somebody came to the idea that we got to celebrate his birthday. Now, the idea comes from paganism. It comes from religious people in the ancient past who were worshiping the sun. They were worshiping Nimrod. They were worshiping Amun-Ra. They were worshiping Mars and Neptune and Jupiter and the sun and the moon and the stars. And I don't see that that's very rational, logical. I don't think that the moon up there is going to do very much for me. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there in the world that do, and they're probably very sincere religious people. And that's what I equate with foolishness. In fact, that's what the Creator of the universe calls foolishness, worshiping the sun, moon, and the stars. And then some evolution guy is going to say, yeah, Gordon, right on. And that's why I ask you, well, what are you practicing Christmas for then, evolutionist? All the evolutionary people that I know of, they all practice Christmas, just like all the Christians do. If it's dumb for Christians, then isn't it dumb for evolutionists, agnostics, atheists? Why don't we grow up? Why don't we reject that which we can see is plainly illogical, nonsensical? All right, so wisdom then deals with instruction, and it deals with knowledge, it deals with truth. That's what the bottom line is. Let's take a subject matter. Let's take cancer. Cancer is something that's in everybody's vocabulary. Cancer is with us whether we like it or not. It's a fearsome disease. And it kills, oh my God, how many people does it kill every year? 500,000, isn't it? I think it is. I think that heart disease is killing 750,000 and cancer is killing about 500,000. About 2.5 million people a year are dying here in the United States. And cancer is the number two killer. And it's fearsome. And women are just terrified of breast cancer. There's one woman that I read about. She had both of her breasts removed. Not because she had cancer, but because her mother had died from breast cancer, and her grandmother was in her family. And so she thought she would have her breast removed, and then she wouldn't die from breast cancer. God, that's really bright. I think the woman's right. You know, if you cut off your head, you could eliminate brain tumors. Cut off your breast, you can eliminate breast cancer. Cut off your legs, you can eliminate leg cancer, I guess. You know, you cut out your liver, you can eliminate liver cancer. Surely there's got to be some other source of wisdom, some other source of reason, logic, and common sense where we could identify what causes cancer. Now, the medical professionals, I mean, the pundits tell you that there's no cure to cancer. Let me give you 14 cures to cancer. You ready for this? The Ann Wigmore wheatgrass cure, juice and raw food diet, the Indian black salve called Cansema with the active ingredient bloodroot, ozone, garlic, Essiac from Renee Cassie, Royal Rife frequency machine, coffee enemas by Max Gerson, vitamin and mineral therapy by Joel Wallach, Laetril, vitamin B17, Easter Lily Oven, vitamin and mineral therapy, cut, burn, and poison, and frankincense, also known as essential oils. 14. So when I see these march on cancer and run for cancer and donate to cancer, I don't respond. Why? It doesn't make any sense to me. If you got 14 cures for cancer, why do you need a 15th, 16th, or 17th? Furthermore, except for cut, burn, and poison, which cures 37% of cancer patients at current statistical rates, if you get caught, if you're a medical doctor, and you get caught using Essiac, garlic, ozone, or Cansema, you will be prosecuted and jailed. If you came to me and you said, "Mr. Gordon, I have cancer, and I listen to you on the radio, can you tell me how to cure my cancer?" If I told you, I could be prosecuted, jailed, for crying out loud. The answer is no, I can't tell you how to cure cancer. It's against the law. Don't you know? Somebody might say, "What about free speech? Doesn't cover cancer cures. There are limits to free speech. You can't cry out fire in a crowded theater. And you can't tell somebody how to cure cancer." Just telling you, you know, if you thought there was free speech here in America, you got your head up the wrong end again. So let's wake up and let's use a little wisdom here. Now, I can have opinions, and I can read and I can do research. You know, if let's take the Ann Wigmore story over here. I first heard about the Ann Wigmore cancer therapy. Ann Wigmore was an old lady. At one time, she was a baby. At one time, she was a young woman. At one time, she was a middle-aged woman. When I heard about her, she was an old lady in Boston, Massachusetts, and she was running a clinic up there. And she'd take cancer patients after they had been given up for dead, and she'd take them in and she'd feed them wheatgrass. Wheatgrass. Now, there's nothing magical about wheat grass. Wheat is a grain. Wheat is a grass. And it just grows like ryegrass and Timothy grass and Johnson grass. And as this grass grows up, it has heads on it, and it produces seeds. And some seeds we call Johnson seeds, and some seeds we call Timothy seeds, and some seeds we call rye seeds, and some seeds we call wheat seeds. Ann Wigmore discovered that if you take this wheat when it's growing, before it heads out, and cut it, juice it, and drink the juice, it'll cure cancer. The tumors, the malignant tumors, will shrivel up and disappear. She discovered that. I never would have suspected such a thing. I don't know that. I didn't know that. I had to read it. Somebody had to give me revelation. Now, I don't know if she experimented. I don't know if somebody told her. I don't know if it's an old Indian remedy that came from the Osage Indians. I don't know where she got it. Do I know it works? Well, based upon the testimony of the people who had cancer and who did the Ann Wigmore wheatgrass therapy, it works. And to cite my hero, Kent Hovind. Now somebody's going to write me a letter, and they do that every day. So they're going to write me a letter and say, "You know, Gordon, you got your head up the wrong end again. You don't know what you're talking about." Hovind's the guy that asked the evolution guy. Remember, he said, do you know everything there is to know in the world? And the guy said, no. Do you know half of everything there is to know in the world? The guy said, no. He said, could it be that what I just told you is a part of that one half of everything in the world there is to know that you never heard of before? I don't know how many cancer cures there are. I know of 14, and I'm a plumber, for crying out loud. I haven't spent a day in law school. It's true, too. I haven't spent a day in law school. I haven't spent a day in medical school. But that doesn't mean that I can't learn that there is a cure to cancer that's outside of operations, radiation, and chemotherapy. You know, there's knowledge out there that you and I have never heard of. There's knowledge out there that even cancer specialists, oncologists, have never heard of before. Do you believe that every oncologist in the United States knows everything that there is to know in the whole wide world? Is there just something that maybe one cancer doctor doesn't know? Just one. Hell, I'll just bet you there's a whole bunch of stuff that lots of doctors don't know. Let me tell you a story over here from a guy. I'm talking about frankincense. Now, frankincense is an essential oil. In the Bible, there are 32 of these herbal remedies that are mentioned in the Bible. Now, herbs are those things, you know, that are plants. Like vitamin C, you know, comes from tomatoes. All right, so a tomato is an herb, and you can use it as a medicine. You know, if you've got scurvy, you could use tomatoes as a medicine. By eating tomatoes, you'd get vitamin C. The vitamin C is the active ingredient that cures the scurvy. Scurvy is caused by vitamin C deficiency. We've talked about this before. All diseases are caused by starvation. So, when we take a look at cancer is caused by starvation. You're being starved. Well, you could be poisoned also, but typically you're being starved. And you need something, that is in the wheatgrass. This wheatgrass has something in it. It has vitamins, minerals, I don't know what's in the wheatgrass, but there's something in the wheatgrass there that kills cancer tumors. Juice from raw food. You cannot get enough nutrients out of the food that you're buying in the grocery store. But if you'll juice it, let's take vitamin A. I think it's vitamin A that's in carrots. And if I'm wrong, you know, send me a letter and say, hey, Gordon, you're stupid. It ain't vitamin A. It's vitamin something else. I think it's vitamin A that you find in carrots. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion here, you got a vitamin A deficiency, and it's causing some symptom. Do you know how many carrots you'd have to eat to get enough vitamin A out of those carrots? But here's what you can do. You can take 5 pounds of carrots, and you can juice them. And as I recall, you get about, 1.5 or 2 quarts of juice out of 5 pounds of carrots. And then you could sit there in a day's time. You couldn't eat 5 pounds of carrots in a day, but you could eat 5 pounds of carrot juice in a day, and then you could get all that vitamin A into your body, which would give you that quick cure that you're looking for. And that's why juice will cure cancer, because you can get the vitamins and minerals that you need, which is causing this cancer to start with. And that's why these cancer cures are so effective, because they've been tested by other people. And they're totally natural. Well, not all of them, but most of them are totally natural. This coffee enema over here by Max Gerson over here, what that coffee enema does, it makes your liver function. It gives your liver a shot. And then your liver, you know, has to detoxify your body. And so your body will detoxify if you're using coffee. Evidently, it's the caffeine in the coffee, which shocks your liver. Now, it's not coffee that you drink. It's the coffee that you use in an enema in your colon. And Gerson tested this for many years and cured many people of cancer. And this coffee enema is very Now, if any of you cancer doctors out there were to recommend the Gerson coffee enemas out there, you're going to lose your license, sucker. You better not do that. You know, you've got a livelihood, you know, to maintain, and an office practice, a business, a wife and kids, and a lawn to mow. So you better not do any of these things. Now, if you happen to be one of the people that have cancer, for instance, here's the argument for expensive urine by Dr. Joel Wallach. And he says vitamins play a role in long-term health. Long considered to be fringes of medicine, the study of how vitamins affect the body and help prevent chronic diseases is now winning broad attention and respect among mainstream medical researchers. Scientists who thought the major benefits of the nutrients were to prevent deficiency diseases like rickets and beriberi are learning that most of the vitamins play far more fundamental and long-term roles in the body than anybody had suspected. They're now gathering provocative evidence that vitamins influence the health and vibrancy of nearly every organ, and that these enigmatic chemicals may help forestall or even reverse many diseases of aging, including cancer, heart disease, osteoporosis, a flagging immune system, neurodegeneration, and other chronic disorders. On the question of our diets, it would also seem that the aforementioned doctor has also never had sight of Senate Document 264, some verbatim and unabridged extracts from the same reading like this. The alarming fact is that foods, fruits, and vegetables and grains, now being raised on millions of acres of land that no longer contains enough of the certain needed minerals, are starving us no matter how much of them we eat. And Wallach, remember, is the guy I report on every once in a while. And here's a neat little portion here. See if I can find it. A 20-week human fetus with spinal bifida produced by folic acid deficiency in the mother. Spinal bifida is caused by folic acid deficiency. And then there's a couple other stories in here. This particular gangrene toe is a result of uncontrolled diabetes. Research shows that chromium and vanadium can prevent adult onset diabetes. Chromium and vanadium deficiency causes adult onset diabetes. Now, I know one of you are going to write me a letter and say, Gordon, you said it was Coca-Cola that caused it. I didn't say it caused it. I said the consumption of soda pop has doubled in the last 20 years. And coincidentally, the incidence of diabetes has doubled over the past 20 years. And so my conclusion would be, well, let's see. If we wanted to double diabetes again over the next 20 years, we should concentrate on doubling the consumption of soda pop. It worked the last time. It ought to work the next time. Now, evidently, the sugar that's in the soda pop interferes with your body's ability to assimilate vanadium and chromium. So if it doesn't interfere with it, or if it doesn't destroy it, or if it doesn't do something along that line, we discover that the people who drink less soda pop, take in less refined sugar, have less problems or less likely to get diabetes. So there's your story. So when we take a look at cancer over here, there's 14 cures. We don't know what causes cancer. At least that's the conventional wisdom. But here's something over here. A urinary calcite stone in the bladder of a green iguana resulting from a chronic calcium deficiency. So you take a iguana, you take a little lizard over here, and you give him, you know, a calcium deficiency, and you take a look at what happens to him. Here's a cure for, here's frankincense. In this noon broadcast on Wednesday, February 1st, Paul Harvey reported findings that malignant melanoma cancer has been found to be treatable with frankincense oil, a Virginia Tech scientist, Professor John Robertson, director of the college's Center for Comparative Oncology, said he discovered the oil has fairly selective anti-tumor activity and doesn't appear to disrupt normal cells. Not surprisingly, Robertson's focus is on isolating the one key ingredient so that pharmaceutical companies can patent it. Hey, that's why we want a cancer cure. We want to be able to isolate the chemical component that is contained in an essential oil called frankincense so that we can patent it and make profit off of it. Boys and girls, you can take frankincense today. Frankincense is an oil that comes from a particular plant. Just like vitamin C, you know, comes from particular plants. Vitamin A comes from particular plants. And all these symptoms that we're suffering from over here come from deficiencies of vitamins and minerals and acids and things that we have to have, essential nutrients. So if you come down with one of these diseases, if you could isolate the plant that you need that has that nutrient in it, that's the one you're looking for. Easter lily ovum. There's something in Easter lilies, not just the lily, but in the ovum of the Easter lily. There's something in there. There's some nutrient. There's some mysterious something that causes tumors to disappear. In fact, I got personal experience with this. I didn't do it myself. It's just that my wife did. She had cancer in 1984. Went up to Dr. Lester. And Lester said that he'd like to try this Easter lily ovum on her, and he did. And the cancer came out in her stool. I mean, it just dissipated. You could see it in the toilet bowl. So he took samples of it, and the dead cancerous tissues were killed by the Easter lily ovum. That's the only thing she was taking for the cancer. And it disappeared in about 6 weeks. It took 6 weeks to kill it. And dissipate it. And so that was my personal experience with it. Now, this Easter lily ovum, which came from Oklahoma, is outlawed by the Food and Drug Administration. I mean, you can't have that stuff. It's against the law. It's like bloodroot, the active ingredient in Cancema. You can't have bloodroot. It's an herb. Bloodroot is a plant, grows out here in my garden. You can have the plants, that's fine. But now if I go out in that garden and I take that bloodroot and I dry it down, grind it up, and I sell it to you, oh my God, they'll be after me like I was selling you crack cocaine, for crying out loud. Oh yeah, you people out there have been living, you know, like virgins in Hollywood, you know, don't understand how the FDA and the AMA and the American Cancer Society work. They work as a team. You know, this is a money-making program. And there's a protocol for curing cancer, and it does not include frankincense, vitamin and mineral therapy, Easter lily ovum, or Laetrile. So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, I would say that wisdom would be truth, that what we're really after, if we were wise people, what difference does it make whether we can patent the active ingredient in frankincense? If frankincense cures cancers, or at least some kinds of cancers, then why don't we open that up for the express purpose of curing and alleviating sickness and disease, and to hell with Merck and Pfizer, and to hell with the stockholders? I mean, we seem to be real concerned about the stockholders and the viability of these multinational pharmaceutical corporations and their profit margins. It's so much so that we put people in jail to make sure that these cancer cures don't get out to the general public. But is that really wise? Is that really the wisest use of knowledge, medical knowledge, or medical cures? I thought that the purpose for research, you know, medical research, was to find cures. And so here's a researcher that says, yeah, we find that frankincense cures cancer. But you see, we can't patent frankincense. That's a food. Anybody can go out and buy frankincense, for crying out loud. That's no good for the pharmaceutical industry. So what we want to do is we want to break this frankincense down so that we can get a synthetic chemical that comes from coal tar from the oil fields of Iran, so that we can patent it and make profit off of it and put people in jail if they violate our patent. Is that really the wisest use of our resources? All right, so there's that story. Let's give you your mid-course reminder here so that we can satisfy the Federal Communications Commission of 80 countries around the world and give you some information that each of these governments require. To begin with, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed to the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, now we've taken a look at cancer. And let's take a look at Christians. Take a little swipe at them, I guess. Once in a while, somebody will say to me, I'm a born-again Christian. Or they will say to me, I have been saved. Or, have you been saved? Or, are you saved? Sometimes they'll say, don't you want to go to heaven? And the answer is no, I don't want to go to heaven. And when I say that to people, especially Christians, well, I suppose Muslims would be shocked also. Most people believe that they go to heaven. Where did the idea, where did the belief that going to heaven is the reward of the saved? I know that it's pretty common knowledge. I went to Lutheran school when I was a kid. They sent me off to Lutheran school. And I can tell you from what Pastor Kohler told us, and I'm presuming that he was speaking for the entirety of the Lutheran Church, he said, good people go to heaven, bad people go to hell, and burn for all of eternity in the pits of hell, which is down. I don't know exactly down where, because living on a round planet, down, about as far down as you could go, would be the center of the earth, where it's real hot down there. They tell us that the earth is got a center that's made up of molten iron. That'd be real hot. And you live down there for eternity. I mean, you're a bad guy for, like Joe Stalin, he was a bad guy for 73 years. And in his early years, he wasn't even a bad guy. He went to seminary, and he was a religious guy, probably a Christian. And then when he got to be about 20, he turned to atheism and communism, and he got bad. So take 20 off of 73. Now, he was only really a badass for about 53 years. But God is going to torture and punish him for billions and billions of years because of his 53 bad years. He's going to get billions and billions and trillions, eternity of suffering, punishment, torture. Hell, we wouldn't do that to a rattlesnake. You know that? I mean, if you saw a rattlesnake, you'd probably kill it, but would you torture it for hours and hours and hours? Would you just spend a lot of your time, effort, and energy torturing this poor, dumb animal? You know, I'm a farmer, and I have to kill animals, you know, every once in a while, but I don't torture them. I don't kill them by strangling them to death. You know, I shoot them between the eyes. I shoot them with a gun. Kill them instantly. Put him right out of his misery. You know, if I had a horse with a broken leg, I'd feel real bad about him, and I'd go out there and I'd shoot him in the head and put him out of his misery. I wouldn't leave him there to suffer. But for some reason, religious people have God, the Creator, whoever their God is. It isn't what they got from the Bible, but they've got these religious ideas, and they're out here selling them. They sell these religious ideas. Like, I've been saved. Or, don't you want to go to heaven? Let's take a look at this, don't you want to go to heaven? Over in John, the book, the Gospel of John, chapter 3, verse 13, tells you the answer to that right there. And all you Christians can read this because it's in the New Testament. I know you can't read the Old Testament, but you could read the New Testament here, and here it is, in John 3:13, where it says, no man has ascended up to heaven, but he that came down from heaven, even the Son of Man which is in heaven. Did you see that? And I got a little notation here in my Bible in the margin. See Acts 2:34. So let's just flip over here to Acts 2, verse 34. See what that says. No man has ascended into heaven. And in Acts 2:34 it tells us, for David is not ascended into heaven, but he saith himself, the Lord said unto my Lord, sit thou on my right hand, till I make your foes your footstools. You know, David was called a man after God's own heart. David was a real rounder. I mean, he was out killing people, committing adultery. You know, he was quite a guy. But God liked him, and you know, in spite of all of his problems in life, he said, "This is a man after my own heart." David, if anybody was going to go to heaven, wouldn't it be King David, the guy who is mentioned over here in Hebrews chapter 11, the faith chapter, as being the king over Israel in the millennium when Jesus returns and the resurrection occurs and David is going to be made king over the nation of Israel? Do you know where David is today? His sepulcher is, he's dead and buried, and his sepulcher is with us to this day. And yet, you know, my Aunt Bessie, you know, she I've had people tell me, my Aunt Bessie is looking down from heaven, looking over you, little Georgie. My Aunt Bessie is in the Ferndale Cemetery with worms crawling in and out of her eye sockets. She is dead and buried. And unless there's a resurrection, which fortunately here in the Bible, Revelation chapter 20, tells us that there's three resurrections. You never heard that in church. You heard that you go to heaven when you die. The Bible says you don't, you didn't, you won't, and you never will. Satan wanted to go to heaven. He fomented a rebellion in heaven. He was cast down to the earth, and I guess all of his followers want to go to heaven with him to take over the throne of the universe. All right, but John 3:13 and Acts 2:34, and I could sit here and cite a bunch more for you, you know, if we wanted to, but I think that's enough for right now. My point is this. Is it really wise to run around believing in these kinds of fairy tales and promoting them? Because it's counterproductive. You see, the evolutionist and the atheist and the agnostic, they come along and they say, no, this sounds foolish to me. What is it that sounds foolish? It sounds foolish to cast the creator of the universe, the God, the creator, in the role of a sadistic maniac. And that's exactly what you religious people are doing. When you talk about sending people to hell to burn for eternity because of their sins on planet Earth, you are suggesting that the creator of the universe is going to do something that no rational human being would do to a worm, and that is torture an ignorant form of life, and to cause pain, suffering, and anguish. And that's what the religious people are running around here telling. If you don't believe what I believe, you're going to hell. You're going to burn for eternity. That's what they knock on my door, and that's the message that they want to convey to me. And I'm sitting here saying to myself, well, thank you very much for coming here to share your wisdom with me. I don't think that that's wisdom. I think that's foolishness. And I don't subscribe to that because the Bible doesn't subscribe to it. And these are the people that run around, you know, with Bibles under their arms. I mean, they'd do better, I think, if they were running around with the Reader's Digest or in the Encyclopedia Britannica. At least then they wouldn't be suggesting that God, in some way, was condoning these ideas that they, in their religious ideologies, are trying to convey to the rest of us. And there's 476 of these gangs out here of people who have these different religious ideologies knocking on our doors and telling us that Darwin and evolution is a fairy tale. And then they subscribe to fairy tales like, you're going to burn for all eternity in hellfire. And they cite scripture off point and out of context in the Bible. The Bible does talk about a lake of fire. There's no doubt about it. When God gets to the end of the planet, when he gets to the end of time, his 7,100-year time frame, he's going to take people who are incorrigible, people who are really badasses that need killing, and he's going to destroy them. And he says he's going to destroy them in a lake that burns with fire and brimstone. It kind of reminds me of a volcano with molten lava. And he's going to take you and throw you into that molten vat of lava. Now, let me ask you, think about this now for a second. How long will you live? How long will you suffer in this vat of lava? Well, I was reading a story the other day about Herculaneum. I think it's Herculaneum or Herculaneum. Mount Vesuvius in 79 AD blew up. And there came down the side of the mountain what they call a pyroclastic flow. That is a super hot air mass. Pyroclastic flow. And it struck human beings that were in the city of Herculaneum. With this superheated air, it caused the moisture, the water, in people's heads to turn to steam, and their heads literally exploded instantaneously. It was so hot that it vaporized people's skin and flesh from right off their bones. Now, that does sound like a pretty damn hard way to die. But, you know, if you're subjected to a heat source that is so hot, so suddenly, that it turns the water in your head, in your brain, to steam, which is trapped and then explodes. That sounds like pretty instantaneous death to me. I mean, that sounds like it's pretty fast. It's something less than a billion years of suffering and hellfire, wouldn't you say? All right. Now, with that said, this fiction that these people are coming up here with, they use these scriptures in the Bible that talk about God destroying the wicked in the lake of fire. And then they expand on that and they say, well, he's going to burn you up forever and ever and ever and ever. There's no end to it. Now, that's not what the scripture teaches at all. There are some mistranslations from the original Hebrew and Greek into English that these guys seize upon, and then they're selling you something. See, they got a product to sell, and they're selling fear. If you don't join the right church, you're going to hell, and God help you. And so, yeah, you know, to avoid that, you'd join Catholicism, you'd join Protestantism, you'd join most anything to avoid something like that. In the final analysis, you know, assuming that you turn out to be as bad as people picture me, and they send me letters every once in a while, and they tell me how I'm leading all you people astray, and you're all going to go to hell along with me, and I'm sitting here saying, well, in the worst case scenario, When God takes me and throws me into the lake of fire, it is going to be an act of mercy on His part. He is going to kill me very, very rapidly. And He's not going to torture me forever and ever and ever. He's going to kill me. He is going to destroy me. He is going to eradicate me. But He's not going to torture me. And I say that's good news. Now, I hope that I can qualify. I hope that that doesn't happen to me. I would like to get eternal life. I would like to live forever. I would like to obey God, keep His commandments, and follow His instructions. And I'm working real hard, and I'm going to do the best I can. But let's suppose I fail. Let's suppose I'm like Joe Stalin and Adolf Hitler and Genghis Khan, and I screw up and I don't make the grade. Then He's going to destroy me. He's going to throw me into the lake of fire. Now, Jesus made an observation in Luke 6, verse 46. He said, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" You know, that's a pretty good question. You know, I think that that is based upon wisdom. You know, here's the Creator Himself. He says, "All right, now you religious people out there that call upon, do you know Jesus? Isn't Jesus wonderful? Did you give your heart to Jesus?" Okay, all of that's good. All of that's wonderful. And it's sanctimonious and it's sentimental. And it shows that you're real concerned. Okay, now Jesus made some observations. One of His observations was that we ought to obey God and keep His commandments. In fact, He said, "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven." Did you know that? Not everyone that says, "Do you know Jesus today? Have you given your heart to Jesus?" Not every one of you that says that now is going to enter into the kingdom of heaven. Did you know that? Now, that's not my opinion. I'm just telling you that's what He said. First person quotation, and He said that in Matthew 7, verses 21. 22 and 23. He said, "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, is going to enter into the kingdom." Some of you are going to fail. So, you know, I'm sorry for you, but then that's the way the breaks are, you know. Now, Jesus made an observation. He said, "A man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God." Man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word. He said that twice, by the way. He said that in Matthew 4, verse 4, and Luke 4, verse 4. Some of the words that He said that came out of His mouth was keep the commandments. Some rich guy came up to Him one day. This is about Matthew, I don't know, Matthew 13, 14, something like that. Or maybe Matthew 16 or something. Let me see if I've got it here. Oh, it ain't Matthew 16. About Matthew 15. Nope, it ain't Matthew 15. About Matthew 13, 14. I don't know, I can't put my finger on it right now, but there was a rich guy came over to Him one day and he said, "Hey," it's in Matthew 19, verse 16. He said, "Behold, one came to Him and said, 'Good master, what good thing do I have to do that I may have eternal life?' And he said unto him, well, why do you call me good? There's none good but one, that's God. If you'll enter into life, keep the commandments. That's a wild concept. You know, I haven't heard any preachers running around saying, keep the commandments. Well, I shouldn't say I haven't heard any. Once in a while, you'll find a preacher that'll tell you that. There are a few honest to God, real God-fearing preachers in Christian theology. But, you know, they are so rare. I mean, for you to find a preacher that's going to tell you to obey God and keep his commandments, I mean, that guy's about as rare as teeth in a chicken's beak. You know, that isn't going to happen very often. So Jesus said that you ought to keep the commandments. And this guy said, which? And then he cited five of the Ten Commandments. He said, which? And Jesus said, well, you shall do no murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, honor your father and mother, and, you know, love your neighbor like yourself. Now, when Jesus was making these statements here in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, do you understand that not one word of the New Testament had been written yet, all you Christian people out there? When Jesus said, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, assuming that he wasn't lying to us, assuming that he was telling us the truth, none of the New Testament was written until after Jesus died. So when he made the statement, he was still alive, wasn't he? And he said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. The only words that were written down that proceeded out of the mouth of God were the 39 books of the Old Testament. Did you understand that? Jesus said we should live by every word of the 39 books of the Old Testament. Can you connect those dots? You know, you religious guys out there, can you put those dots together, draw some lines between them, and come to a conclusion? And so, when he says, think not that I've come to destroy the law of the prophets, it kind of knocks in the head these religious ideas that people have. Oh, Jesus nailed the law to the cross and took it out of the way so that we don't have to do that anymore. He tells this rich guy over here, don't commit adultery. And so when you're out here committing adultery, well, it's okay for me to do that because Jesus nailed the law to the cross. He knew how weak I was and how I couldn't tell Mabel no. And how I just had to go to Flo's whorehouse one more time. That's why I always like longshoremen and truck drivers, you know. They're a class of people that wear blue collars. They're called blue-collar workers, but they're pretty honest guys. A truck driver, you know, he's taking a little leave, you know, on, with a lot lizard in the back lot of a truck stop. But he's not making excuses, you know, and saying, well, you know, the law's nailed to the cross with Jesus. And he just said, yeah, you know, I needed a little, and so here she came, and I took it. Longshoreman, you know, he goes, I always liked old Jerry Spence. You know, he went to a whorehouse one time in Riverton, Wyoming. And he was describing in one of his books, you know. He's a young kid, you know, 19 years old. He joined the Navy. And he was in a whorehouse, and he was describing, you know, how his first experience in a whorehouse was. I liked Jerry Spence. He's just telling it like it is. Sure, it's wrong. Sure, it's a crime. Sure, it violates the commandment that says thou shalt not commit adultery. But he isn't a damn hypocrite. He isn't running around, you know, telling you about, do you know Jesus? Do you love Jesus? Because the same Jesus said, you know, if you loved me, you'd keep my commandments. In fact, John made an observation that's over here in 1 John 5, I believe it is. It says, for this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. You know, if you loved God, you'd keep his commandments. You wouldn't be running around here practicing Christmas, Easter, New Year's. You'd be following Jeremiah 10. When he said, learn not the way of the heathen, you'd say, yay, Lord, I guess I better not learn the way of the Mithra, sun-worshipping, Baal-worshippers, by going out and cutting a tree out of the forest. I guess maybe I ought to obey you and keep your commandments and practice the Feast of Tabernacles. Somebody's going to say, well, that's Jewish. That just goes to show you how racist people are concerning Jews. That's Jewish! And always with a sneer. See? never occurred that maybe some Jew out here might know something the rest of us hadn't heard of yet. We haven't figured that out. That's why I liked old Kent Hovind's observation. You know, do you know everything there is to know in the world? Well, I'm one of those. I didn't quite know everything that there is in the world. In fact, I really don't know very much. Oliver Wendell Holmes asked that one time. His law clerk asked him, how much law do you know, Mr. Chief Justice of the Supreme Court? And Holmes thought about it for a minute. He said, well, I don't know very much law. Come think of it, I really don't know very much law. I mean, if you went up to a Supreme Court justice and said, how much law do you know, Mr. Chief Justice Roberts? If he was honest, he'd probably say, well, I don't know very much. You know, I'm sitting in my office and I'm looking up here now at the U.S. Supreme Court reports. My God, there must be 100 volumes up there, and I don't have it all, but I got 100 volumes up here. I haven't read all of those. I don't know all the law that's in those volumes. I'd have to say I don't know very much law. But Holmes went on to say, but I'm god-awful good at the little bit that I do know. I'm god-awful good at the little bit I do know. Now, that's a specialist for you. Now, you know, we talk a lot about inherited sin. You know, that in Ezekiel chapter 18, it tells you that the sin, the soul that sins, it shall die. Did you know that souls can die? You know, the religious guys are running around telling us that we've got immortal souls and that these souls never die, that these souls go to heaven, that these souls are indestructible. Did you know that? Have you been to church? Well, in Ecclesiastes 3, verses 19 through 21, it tells us that beasts, that cows and horses and dogs and pigs and cats have souls, and the soul that sins, it shall die, and that there's no preeminence over the beast, or man over the beast, or the beast over man. We all go to the same place. Dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return. Did you know that? Yeah, it's in Ecclesiastes 3, verses 19 through 21, Ezekiel 18, verses 19 through 24. It tells you that souls die. You don't want to know what a soul is? You are a soul. And the soul that sins, the soul that breaks the law, shall die. Hey, that's what wisdom tells us. That's what we observe. That's what we all know. But that isn't what we believe. That's not what we teach, and it's not what we practice. We all know better, but we practice something else. That's foolishness. That's not wisdom. That's the opposite to being wise. That is stupid. Or as God says, dumb on purpose. Yeah, I'm out of time again. I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School offers a free four-hour CD package. To order yours, just call The Law School and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. In The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.